Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. It's August the 24th, 1980, and this is tape number 455. These are made on tape cassettes and distributed in various places around the country and overseas, and therefore we number them each week. I'm going to pass most of the important news of the week, the various murders of important witnesses, airplane crashes, problems in Bolivia, the increased narcotics trade, the removal of the drug agents from Bolivia, the foreign coups, the trials in Korea, the important trial in Korea, the police state, the mass arrests there. I'm going to pass all of that up to do 2 weeks of broadcasting on Ronald Reagan, and hopefully maybe 2 more weeks after that on Billy Carter, and maybe another week on the independent candidates. My purpose of doing this is to share information that I have, 17 years research on Ronald Reagan and the other candidates, basing the behavior and the contacts they have today with people that I have studied and researched for the past years. I have no intention of telling you to vote against Ronald Reagan or for Ronald Reagan. I simply want to share, as I say, some of the information that I have. I couldn't possibly share it all in 2 hours. And having the experience of Ronald Reagan as governor in California from 1966 to 1974, there are very many personal and pleasant experiences that happened to people during his administration, and the man, I believe, is a total fraud and a front and put in by the public relations agencies, and it's a tragedy that he's gotten as far as he has without being exposed. So I'm not saying vote for him or vote against him. I just want to tell you about him, and all that I say about him you can get from the sources that I print out that accompany these tapes if you write to me. In my own personal experience and frame of reference, it seems impossible that people like Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan or Lyndon Johnson could ever become president of the United States. I guess it seems impossible because we were never taught about McKinley or Coolidge or Harding or Herbert Hoover, and I never did study the intricacies or the stupidities or the mediocrities of the people who were president. We looked up to them and believed that they were the best selection for the country and didn't do research in those days. Not very many people did. Or if they did, the books were obscure and not known and simply faded away. There isn't much critical about these creeps that should have been taught in the textbooks and classrooms while we were growing up. Ronald Reagan is a California phenomena, just as Richard Nixon is, and it juggles my mind to believe that people on the East Coast, with the high financing of Wall Street, the multinational banks, the large institutions of education of Harvard and Yale and Princeton and the top 10 universities or state universities, it's hard to believe that they would accept such jokers as were produced in California. California, the state of Richard Nixon, Earl Warren, a clown of the First Order who built himself up to a prestigious position as the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and instrumental in concealing the murder of the President of the United States, John Kennedy, and linking his name, the Warren Commission, to that terrible event. This is the state where a financier and inventor like Howard Hughes can be kidnapped and drugged and destroyed while his empire is built of billions of dollars for profit and control, and nobody can see a person using that name Howard Hughes for many years. It's the state of Walt Disney and the public relations offices like J. Walter Thompson and various large public relations firms selling you this Tomorrowland, this future land, this perfect little town where there's the automated Abraham Lincoln and a lot of facade that has nothing to do with the past as it was or the real world as it is today. It's the state of the motion pictures and television, the entertainment shows, the documentaries, the mini documentaries, the falsified histories, a place of the Charles Manson era of Altamont, of Stanford research, mind control, Jonestown, mass murders, La Costa with Mo Dalitz, Randolph Hearst and the Hearst Castle, the phony king of San Simeon, Lockheed, Litton Industries, Rockwell, space shuttles, planning tomorrow on the space when they've polluted planet Earth, all of this coming from California. As I say, I can't understand how the East Coast, with a classical education in the humanities and literature, and what we assume would be a culture, a training or opportunity of prep schools and universities, to have these people out here representing the entire country and representing the United States across the earth, while people laugh at us and shake their heads in disbelief. I don't know. I know the Mellons and the DuPonts, the Morgans, the Vanderbilts, the Rockefellers, the Auchincloss, the Astors must have been terribly corrupt, and they were individually, but I can't imagine them handing even to their own children or their generation candidates for office such as we have produced out here in California. I sometimes think that the resurrection of the Titanic is the desire to bring back the old society or the class, the one that sunk when it met the iceberg. And I can't imagine why the Eastern establishment allowed Tom Dewey, running for president, with Earl Warren as vice president at that time, making contacts with Lucky Luciano and organized crime and the mob in Italy and incorporating them into the OSS and into the CIA. And I can't believe how easy it was for West Point and Annapolis to take their generals and admirals and incorporate them with organized crime and expect to be able to rule the world that way. The baby they produced out of this ridiculous marriage of military strength and dictatorship in this country that we spread all over the world and disguised as democracy, what that marriage produced were people like Lyndon Johnson, Richard Nixon, Jimmy Carter, and Ronald Reagan. And what they really are doing is carrying on a large narcotic war between the various candidates for control of gambling syndicates and turf of imported narcotics that is much, much bigger than many of the minerals and commodities that they deal and trade every single day. I study history because it is interesting, and I like to read about these characters and how they got where they did and how close we are to having total idiots and front men make vital decisions for our health and our minds, for the vegetation and everything that's precious on this planet we put in their hands. Spencer and Roberts was a public relations firm in California, and it was their task to present Ronald Reagan as a person that the Republicans could use in 1966 for governor. He had been an actor from 1937 to 66, and they described in a book called Dancing Bear, we had to overcome three things: Reagan's inexperience, the actor bit, and his lack of knowledge of state government. We decided not to compete with Governor Brown, that's Pat Brown, Jerry Brown's father, who was governor of California in 1966. We decided not to compete with him on a knowledge level of specific issues. We admitted Ronald Reagan was not a professional politician. Reagan pursued a campaign of bland generalities, leaning on such nebulous concepts as morality. He's still doing that. That was in 1964, 1965. They ran that campaign, and they've used it ever since. Reagan was prone to lurch, they said, into blunders, but with an acquired politician's charm and agility in extricating himself. Ronald Reagan was asked about nuclear energy and solar energy when he was in New Hampshire a few years ago, and he responded, "I've been standing in the sun all day and my feet are still freezing." That was his explanation about solar energy. He also gave a speech in Philadelphia where he was talking about third world countries, and on nine separate occasions in that speech, he talked about third world war instead of third world. And they asked him afterwards why he made that mistake, and he said, "It must be Freudian. Perhaps I've been thinking too much about Russia." And that is exactly the answer of the mystery of Ronald Reagan and the history of Ronald Reagan, because if you study him and put him in a time slot, he is only one of many people whose sole goal on earth is to fight Russia at any expense. Dean Rusk was on the Monterey Peninsula a year ago, and I mentioned it on my radio tapes in 1979, That same week, we had out here Helmar Schmidt from Germany, Alexander Haig, Henry Kissinger, Mr. Schultz, Mr. Packard from the Hoover Institute, and Mr. Bechtel. The gentleman, Mr. Packard from Hewlett Packard and Bechtel, have homes here at Pebble Beach. And Dean Rusk was speaking at Monterey Institute of Foreign Studies, and he said, in quotes, "The influence of presidents in foreign policy is discounted. In all my years of negotiating treaties and agreements before the Senate for ratification, I never heard anyone say, let's get out the party platform and see what it says on any matter relating to foreign policy. The presidents go in a succession, but foreign policy is continuous." That was Dean Rusk speaking. As a historical background for Ronald Reagan and how the continuity of the foreign policy goes on no matter what he says or how he says it, I want to refer to a compilation of facts and information that has just been put together by Charles Spears in Texas. He is the most serious student of history that I can think of in the United States today, and that is really quite a compliment. And he's the president of a bank in Sherman, Texas, and he has occupied his time and energy, similar to the way I've been trying to do it, to pinpoint the dates and events that have brought us such mediocre people and so many weapon systems and so much pain and suffering across the earth. And Charles Spears just compiled in a set of pages, it's a self-published document, about 150 pages, and I'm going to get the price from him of what it would cost for postage and duplicating this so that you students of history who want it can have it. It's 150 pages and dates, the most important dates of history, long before there was known a Ronald Reagan, before there was a Reagan, and brought right up to date. On the cover, he explains, "For research use only, from 1914 to 1980, chronology and evolution of the commie gonna get you inquisition by implosion of power mad secret team forces. How we subverted the U.S. Constitution, how it was achieved, 4 presidential elections controlled by assassins. 1964, that was Lyndon Johnson. 1968, Richard Nixon. 1972, Richard Nixon. And 1980, Jimmy Carter. All of them with links to the assassination of President John Kennedy, the murder of Senator Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and at least 1,000 other murders that could be easily detailed that they have known and covered. But we're talking about elections now. Charles puts on the cover of his book, 17 years of research here and for future aid to historiographic perception. This is to counteract the cover-up and Nixon's Burger Court saying, wait 75 years while the slate is wiped clean. And then he has a quotation of Shakespeare, "Let me speak to the yet unknowing world how these things came about. So shall you hear of carnal, bloody, and unnatural acts of accidental judgments, casual slaughters of death put on by cunning and forceful cause. All of this I can truly deliver." And deliver he does in his book. But I'm going to share with you the first page of this chronology of subversion because it is the background of Ronald Reagan's cabinet. The Hoover Institute, the think tank that's in Palo Alto, is the force, it is the ideology, it is the muscle, it is the weapon system that is using Ronald Reagan as their front to wage that Third World War that Reagan referred to 9 times in a speech in Philadelphia. Charles begins August 1914 when World War I starts. The Kaiser of Germany, the King of England, the Tsar of Russia were all cousins. The intellectuals said what the world needs is a good war to purify the bloodstream of mankind. By 1918, an entire generation of French, English, and Russians were wiped out. The U.S. lost millions. Some 20 million were killed, and he refers to Barbara Tuchman's book, The Guns of August. By 1918, Russia was in shambles. The Tsar and their family, he puts in, were murdered by the Bolsheviks. I don't believe they were. We disagree on that point, but not on very many points. In 1919, Herbert Hoover began a war against Russia. He held, and this is documented, billions of dollars in his own private pocket of timber and oil concessions. in Russia, and when the communists came in, they took those billions of dollars from Herbert Hoover. The book The Great Conspiracy by Michael Sayers and Kahn refers to the effort of Herbert Hoover to become, he was Secretary of Commerce and President of the United States, and he literally bankrupted this country and brought it to a depression, taking at least 32 million or more documented in congressional hearings to fund the Tsarist Polish troops to get ready for World War II, hoping to reclaim the fortune that was lost at the time of the Russian Revolution. He chronicles the year 1920 when the Versailles reparations were on the brink of anarchy, and how in 1922, that's the year I was born, Henry Luce started Time magazine, his propaganda machine. In 1923, Hitler was writing Mein Kampf. In 1922, Aristotle Onassis was in Argentina beginning his tobacco sale of hashish and marijuana and narcotics that he could compound into a fortune and build by the oil tankers. Howard Hughes was 17 in 1922. That's when his father died, and Noah Dietrich from the Doheny oil people helped take over the tool bit that Howard's father invented that controlled the drilling of oil around the world. 1923, President Harding got his poison in San Francisco, another California event because of the Teapot Dome scandal. He was poisoned in San Francisco. And in the 1920s, Herbert Hoover's files that belonged to the Tsar were brought to Stanford University. And in 1920s, Reinhard Gehlen, the chief of Hitler's Eastern Division Intelligence, who later formed our CIA, began working with the German army and settling agents east and west of Germany so that when war was declared against Russia, all of Europe would belong to Germany and would collapse instantly as the German armies moved in. And that's why France lasted 24 hours and Poland fell under and all the other countries gave up to Hitler immediately. They had been infiltrated and trained, and he continues with J. Edgar Hoover's role as director of the FBI. He began in 1924. And of course, Herbert Hoover was working with Adolf Hitler, with Interpol, with Heydrich and Kaltenbrunner and Nazi war criminals until we were bombed at Pearl Harbor and he was told to stop corresponding during the war years. He was sympathetic to Adolf Hitler before and after the war and with the Nazis that were brought over here after the war to continue their attempt to control the world and to take Russia again. And out of the repository of the Himmler diaries, the lists of people in Great Britain that were to be killed by Adolf Hitler and so forth, out of the Hoover Towers came people through the advertising agencies in California, as I say, J. Walter Thompson and Spencer and Roberts and so forth, that created these monkeys like Nixon and Reagan, who would control the White House and the Pentagon, and they would be the front men, the supposedly packaged, strong anti-communists, getting the weapon systems going that keep this state very well supplied. One out of three people in California, I think, is dependent upon warfare and weapon systems and related operations. Well, Ronald Reagan had direct links all of his career since the 60s. The very people that put him into power, and I'll go into them as much as time allows this week, and I'll continue next week, with those people from the far right who murdered the Kennedy brothers, and Robert Kennedy was killed in Los Angeles and was covered up by Reagan's gang. He had links to the FBI, the CIA, and counterintelligence. He was the Western image, the cowboy image, the public relations good guy chasing the Indians and so forth that was projected to this country as it was done by Hitler in Germany, and I'll go into that. Reagan was instrumental in instigating mind control in this state. The years 1966 to 1974 were the years of Vacaville, the SLA, the Zebra Trials, and I'll run down some of the violences that Reagan was behind. The Garden Plot, the plans to take over America and turn into a fascist state, his Operation Chaos, and so forth. It wasn't a peaceful or a quiet time while he was governor, and I don't know why he's protected so much by the news media because of these interconnecting links of him to all of these operations and the people behind him to these operations. The most important thing to know about Ronald Reagan, I believe, is that he is not his own man. This always comes as a shock Harry Truman obviously wasn't. Neither was war-weary General Eisenhower or Lyndon Johnson or Nixon. But as I say, growing up, it took a long time to realize that a powder puff and a package of 3x5 cards with titles and cues could get a guy like Ronald Reagan up to the position where he could become President of the United States. Reagan was once asked about the controversial Senate One bill that was being presented. This is back in 1975. They were trying to get that through, and the criminal code that was so strict at the height of Watergate. And a reporter asked him, "Governor, how do you feel about the Senate bill?" And Reagan said, "Senate Bill 1? Wait a minute. Do you mean a California bill or a federal bill?" And they said, "The Senate Bill 1." And he said, "I'm drawing a blank. I don't remember. It's very upsetting." And he said, "I must have been on the airplane too long." And then he added, "If you would just give me a little while, about 3 more minutes, it might come to my mind." I'm sure in 3 minutes he would pull out his little card catalog. But the front man between the Pentagon, between the Hoover Institute and Ronald Reagan, of course, were men in Los Angeles, Henry Salvatore, who I'll go into his background, working for Litton Industries and the oil geologist down in Los Angeles, Holmes Tuttle, a car dealer, and Cy Rubell from Union Oil and the public relations firm of Spencer Roberts. They were hired to groom him in 1965 to run against Pat Brown, and they called in the Behavior Science Corporation, the psychologist from this group, to train Ronald Reagan onto the issues so that he'd be familiar with the issues in California. The public relations firm sent him to the Los Angeles-based Behavior Science Corporation to prepare him to learn the issues in the state of California. Reverend McBurney, a very rabid part of that Christian crusade, created the slogan for Ronald Reagan, the Creative Society, and they would present him as a citizen, politician, honest Midwesterner, the very part he played in his movies. Neil Reagan, Ronald Reagan's brother who lives in California, said, in quotes, "I sold Dutch not as my brother, but like a piece of soap." It was Neil Reagan in 1964 who sent Ronald Reagan to see Barry Goldwater, and in 1965 they took away the harsh image of Goldwater, the conservative, and decided to tone it down with Ronnie. His brother also said in Detroit after Ronald got the nomination that Ronald has a soothing effect on folks. When he was governor, you know, there were riots on the campuses and all that in the beginning, but things calmed down under Ronald's administration. Everything began to simmer. People felt like things were getting better. They didn't go around with a chip on their shoulder anymore. That's Neil Reagan from an advertising firm in Rancho Santa Fe. Jonathan Jackson and George Jackson and Rochelle McGee and Geronimo Pratt and the Soledad Brothers and San Quentin Six and Angela Davis and Bobby Hinton, a few that were murdered and are kept and locked up in jail. There's still Geronimo Pratt and Rochelle McGee are still in jail. And the six cremated, the SLA by the LAPD in Los Angeles, killing their own agents. There was so much bloodshed in this state and mass murders that were part of the Reagan team and the counterintelligence at Isla Vista and the riots and the killing of Ruben Salazar. Brother Reagan says that Ronnie had a soothing effect. The U.S. attorney, Robert Myers, killed in a parking lot in Pasadena. He was investigating some of these murders. He didn't have a soothing effect. These prisons were hell holes. People were put in solitary confinement. There was torture and drugs. It was a hard time in California when Ronald Reagan was governor, but his brother passes that off, his brother Neil, and says he remembers happy yesterdays. And I could cite for hours the harm that Reagan's group did personally up and down this state when he was the governor. The public relations firm sold him, and they've done it to this day. Gladwin Hill, a correspondent for the New York Times, wrote in a book about Ronald Reagan, "It is a myth of American politics that our electoral system puts into office the ablest men in terms of academic occupational qualifications. The system puts into office the most electable people, the most agile performers of the obstacle race. One of the biggest hurdles is to establish their identity, and Regan had it ready-made. He left the movie scene when the movies were bad, and he was thrown into General Electric, to a large corporation where he met with heads of the corporation, traveled around the country for several years, many years, 10 years of radio for General Electric, and he went to various countries, various cities each year, and he met thousands of workers at General Electric and the heads of the corporation, so he was known visually so that when he was nominated for governor in 1966, his voice was known on the radio, his movies were reruns, people knew his face. He had been touring around the country for the firm of General Electric, so that there was no candidate on the scene who was more familiar around here than Ronald Reagan. At the time that Watergate came down, the CIA was exposed for supplying photographers, safe houses, equipment for the White House plumbers, and then Tom Charles Houston began to talk, thanks to John Dean, about the COINTELPRO program, and the CIA, it seemed, was acting too overtly in the United States. Part of the condition of their charter was that they were not to be controlling the various facets of our life, the mind control, the medical experiments, the opening of mail, the wiretapping of phones, the photographing of us at demonstrations, and so forth. So Gerald Ford, then President of the United States, after Watergate, appointed by Richard Nixon, had a commission to look into Operation Chaos, and it was headed by Nelson Rockefeller, the vice president, who worked with this COINTELPRO program also, and every member on the commission was part of the intelligence operation in one way or the other. It was a question of the fox guarding the chicken house. But every one of those people on the commission had a long list of public service. No matter how close they were to the intelligence community, they were known as people who had served many, many years and had graduated Phi Beta Kappas, magnum cum laude, and recognized in public service and with their degrees. But on that committee, Gerald Ford appointed the Honorable Ronald Reagan, and in the Rockefeller Report, it said he got his A.B. degree from Eureka College, Illinois. In 1932, he was governor from 1966 to 1974, and he was a motion picture and television actor from 1937 to 1966. As the public relations office said, it was the first time that a motion picture actor became the governor of California or went into politics in such a way. His qualifications for being on the committee were that he had served the Operation Chaos and the COINTELPRO program throughout California from 1966 to 1974, and sat on the very committee that was supposed to question the legality or illegality of these operations. The Rockefeller Committee was such a disaster. It was headed by David Belin, who was on the Warren Commission, another cover-up artist. And they were, as I've mentioned before on other shows, it was so bad that Senator Church also investigated the CIA activities, and then it led to the House Select Committee on Assassinations that went farther into the murder of John Kennedy and Reverend Martin Luther King. They cleverly left out the murder of Robert Kennedy because, again, it would swing back to California, to Evel Younger, the Los Angeles Police Department, to Ronald Reagan's team, and it might taint the possibility that a man that was groomed so cleverly all these years would be brought down with Watergate. Ronald Reagan's tentacles are tied about 100 times to the Watergate people. Maybe we'll get into 5 or 6 or 8 of them, but he was so closely tied and created out of the same mold that it was very important to cut off the links to Ronald Reagan because too much time and money had been invested in this man. He was known nationally, as I say, through the radio, through public speaking, through his own radio talks, and he was groomed for this job. And so there wasn't any chance that Watergate was going to rub off on Reagan. He didn't attend many of those meetings in good taste. He didn't attend, and I'm sure he had good reason, because then, working on a need to know, he would be forced to make statements or open his eyes and look at the very people that put him into power, and he knows who they were. So he didn't go to hardly any meetings of the Rockefeller Committee but he did sign his name to that June report in 1975. It's 10:30 now. I'm going to take a one-minute break and get back to Ronald Regan. This is Mae Brussel in KLRB, Carmel, California.